Straw Man, The Real Story of Your Artificial Person, a private work by Clint, read for you by Josie. Chapter 1, Part 8.
So, does a rainbow exist? How about a mirage in the hot, distant sand? The words, names, of these phenomenon are certainly false, artful, as all words of man are. Our vulgar belief or non-belief in these phenomenon is not required by God, for these natural phenomenon need no such belief, love, or hate by men to exist. They are self-evident, and our knowledge and contemplation of them must be so as well. It is only when we attach fables and unfounded mystery to such glorious spectacles in nature and worship those fictions that they become the artful stories of their former glory, turning what is sacred, real, into what is cursed, not of God. This is when true love dies, for true love can only exist in and upon what is of nature, of reality, not on what it is replaced by in false belief. And of course, the mythical pot of gold at the end of the rainbow causes men to chase after that which they can never acquire, by seeking the end of nature, existence, a parable that truly covers all pursuits in mammon. Of course, this is a far cry from scriptural teaching. Quote, "And the bow shall be in the cloud, and I will look upon it, that I may remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature, of all flesh that is upon the earth." End quote. Genesis chapter 9, verse 16, King James Bible. In reality, in nature, since these titles, words, simply do not exist self-evidently, man should never think of himself or any other part of the reality of nature as merely some thing. Name. I am nothing. This is the first principle of the natural law, the first foundational law of spiritual self-governance, that we should be the property of no man and no other God. To legally name anything is to make it into pretended property, at which point nothing that suffers those legal words of art applied to it may remain solely in the ambiguity and law of God's nature. Not surprisingly, a public citizenship of any nation is also considered, in law, as a thing, noun, or name, not as a living man of God. The Latin word res, as in resident, translates to thing. To carry one's own burdens is to bear responsibility for all of one's own actions with no thing of insurance, and never to place blame or burden onto another, especially upon the insured fictional persona, property, of another. It is to always blame oneself, never one's legal, flattering title, as an excuse. In other words, be no thing that you are not, and consider others by no thing that is not of reality, treating all men the same without exception and without respect of persons and titles. This is the natural law of equity and equality, which is completely opposite to the twisted legal versions of these words regarding persons, property, as fictional slaves of the state. Every man is, I am, and should not be considered as anything else but an equal man, part of the I am, an equal part of the whole oneness of existence that must be worshipped, supported, and protected as such. And thus, we are to treat each other with only love and charity, as we expect all others to treat us. Let yourself not be divided by the false doctrines and intentions of the laws of men that seek to separate each of us from that oneness of source, for only if men are elevated by artificial status in fictional places can any man become a god and oppositional lawmaker. And from this realm of false things is birthed the Christian, the atheist, and the anarchist. This concept of nihility, no thingness, is a wonderful sentiment for the soul, to be sure. But under no circumstances should it be translated or twisted into the same mentality as modern nihilism and/or anarchy. For the ruler and its law is through Jesus Christ, which is the Word, Son, of that ruler. Here we can truly see why the term Jesus Christ is translated to Jehovah is salvation, as this makes all arguments against Christ petty and without merit. For nature, God, alone, is not salvation, but that of nature's law being in control of every aspect of each man's actions. This is a huge and, in fact, opposing difference, for the anarchist believes in, loves, the random chaos of nature, not its permanence of design and law. Nature alone is not salvation, any more than law alone is such. Law without empathy toward all creation is pointless, while living in nature without respect of its law is merely anarchy. Again, the problem is not God. It is that we have never been shown the meaning of that word. The disagreement on who, what, why, when, where, and how God exists is a complexly debated but ultimately simple identity problem. Debates are not fact checks, but instead opinion-based rhetoric without grammar, with each opinion being public propaganda, not scriptural knowledge. And so the Christian calls the worshiping of nature as one God as blasphemy, even as they ludicrously and against scripture worship Jesus Christ as God, creator. Meanwhile, the atheist believes religiously in the non-existence of both Jesus and Jehovah despite their place within its oneness, again due to not knowing the very definition of those words. And finally, the anarchist, often being a result of atheism, generally worships only the self as God, celebrating the lawlessness of a godless nature. We find further evidence that modernist anarchy is a form of nihilism a bit further in history, in William C. Anderson's 1889 definitions. Nihilist. 1. One who denies that anything can be known or shown to exist. See Nihil. Oath. 2. In Russia, a member of a secret society whose aim is overthrow of authority as at present constituted. The ulterior view of the more advanced members being the establishment of a socialistic or communistic republic. See Anarchy, Communism, Government. William C. Anderson's 1889. Anarchy. The absence of government. A state of society in which there is no law or supreme power. If conspiracy had for its object the destruction of the law and government, it had for its object the bringing about of practical anarchy. And when murder has resulted from the conspiracy and the perpetrators are on trial for the crime, whether or not they were anarchists may be a proper circumstance to be considered in connection with other circumstances, with a view of showing what connection, if any, they had with the conspiracy and what were their purposes in joining it. William C. Anderson's 1889. Historically, as so many modern concepts, we find that the term nihilism was probably coined with the Russian novelist Ivan Turgenev in 1862 within his novel Fathers and Sons, though some give credit for its use earlier in that century. It was a word coined to describe the views that Turgenev attributed to the younger crowds of intellectually driven critics of feudal society under the Tsarist. Tsar, autocracy. And so it is no wonder that this anarchist, nihilistic opinion is regaining popularity today. As the feudal nature of the pirate nations becomes more comprehensible, and more people are turned away from the Bible because they are turned off by the various false religions that pretend it sacred, yet have abandoned completely its law. At the end of his book, Baudrillard waxes philosophical on the current state of this post-apocalyptic society, where nihilism is surpassed by actual disappearance, that we are the living ends to the means, the very purpose of the nihilist, anarchist, as non-existence, coming true. But more deeply there is a melancholy attached to the system itself, one that is incurable and beyond any dialectic, logic. It is this melancholia of systems that today takes the upper hand through the ironically transparent forms that surround us. It is this melancholia that is becoming our fundamental passion. It is no longer the spleen or the vague yearnings of the fin de siècle soul. It is no longer nihilism either, which in some sense aims at normalizing everything through destruction. The passion of resentment, res sentiment. No, melancholia is the fundamental tonality of functional systems, of the current systems of simulation, of programming and information. Melancholia is the inherent quality of the mode of disappearance of meaning, of the mode of the violation of meaning in operational systems. And we are all melancholic. Melancholia is the brutal disaffection that characterizes our saturated systems. Once the hope of balancing good and evil, true and false, indeed of confronting some values of the same order, once the more general hope of a relation of forces and a stake has vanished. Everywhere, always, the system is too strong, hegemonic. The more hegemonic the system, the more the imagination is struck by the smallest of its reversals. The challenge, even infinitesimal, is the image of a chain failure, but such a sentiment is utopian. Because it would be beautiful to be a nihilist if there were still a radicality, as it would be nice to be a terrorist if death, including that of the terrorist, still had meaning. There is no longer a stage, not even the minimal illusion that makes events capable of adopting the force of reality. No more stage either of mental or political solidarity. All of that comes to be annihilated on the television screen. We are in the era of events without consequences, and of theories without consequences. There is no more hope for meaning. Excerpt from Simulacrum and Simulation by Jean Baudrillard, page 154 to 156. In essence, Baudrillard is stating here that the goal of the anarchist, of the nihilist, has already taken place. Apocalypse. And when we consider the pushing of such modes of spiritual death, such as artificial intelligence, virtual and augmented reality, quantum physics and computing, the multidimensional and holographic universe theories, singularity theory, and of course, active transhumanism, we can fathom therein our own melancholia towards that which, within the laws of reality, of God, and of nature, ought to be rejected outright from our conscious state of spiritual being. The closer we get to and indeed become a part of technology, the more nihilistic our thought patterns become. For what is more dead than that which is a creation of man? Quote, "We will multiply our effective intelligence a billionfold by merging with the intelligence we have created." End quote. Quote, "We will connect our neocortex wirelessly to the cloud, just the way your cell phone does it. Most of the things you do with that do not take place in the phone. They connect to the cloud. The cloud is pure information technology. It is doubling in power every year as we speak." End quote. Quote, "And so we will be a hybrid of biological thinking and non-biological thinking, which I believe has already started with these devices outside our body, and will become smarter. By 2045, we will expand our intelligence a billionfold." End quote. Ray Kurzweil, inventor, author, and futurist. Separate quotes. Let us be clear. Intelligence is not knowledge. Intelligence is not knowledge. Intelligence is not truth. And man-made intelligence that holds the absence of any natural quality is certainly adversarial to self-existence, God. Perhaps in this way, Kurzweil is the most genius example of all fools, a xenophobe to his own source of life. This, perhaps, is one of the most anti-Christ, anti-God, anti-nature statements ever made by any man. Again, intelligence is not knowledge. Infinite intelligence without foundational knowledge and without the bounds of moral law is perhaps the most frightening possible state of human consciousness, robotic and extremely logical, without the slightest of spiritual balances. This is psychopathy turned popular science. This is the Tower of Babel on steroids, not merely a fruit plucked from the tree of knowledge, but the whole damn forest in one pill. Information is, of course, computer code, but computer code is not in any way true knowledge. Code is another word for language, words. And so, when we are governed, controlled, by such a wirelessly accessible code of language from the cloud, will our public ethnicity still be United States, or a virtual dwelling in an IBM matrix? Will we still have a physical street address, or just a digital IP address? What will happen to schools, to library books, to teachers? Somehow man will increase his intelligence with intelligence that man himself created. An instant download from the mainframe. But what does that mean? What circular feedback wave would that cause in one's capability for mental and moral reasoning? What is the end-user agreement going to say? And what could such massive tones of human-created information squared ad infinitum possibly lead man but to his own created, spiritually dead, hell on earth? The ultimate self-concept, a self-deception that can only be described as the simulation of virtual reality as in the Matrix? Melancholic. Adjective. See melancholy. 1. Depressed in spirits. Affected with gloom. Dejected. Hypochondriac. Grief, indulged to excess, has a tendency to render a person melancholic. 2. Produced by melancholy. Expressive of melancholy. Mournful, as melancholic strains. Just as the melancholic eye sees fleets and armies in the sky. 3. Unhappy, unfortunate, causing sorrow, as accidents and melancholic perplexities. Noun. One affected with a gloomy state of mind. Melancholian, in a like sense, is not used. 1. A gloomy state of mind. Webster's 1828. Melancholy, noun, Greek, black, and bile, Latin, melancholia. 1. A gloomy state of mind. Often, a gloomy state that is of some continuance, or habitual. Depression of spirits induced by grief, dejection of spirits. This was formerly supposed to proceed from a redundance of black bile. Melancholy, when extreme and of long continuance, is a disease, sometimes accompanied with partial insanity. Cullen defines it partial insanity without dyspepsia, indigestion. In nosology, mental alienation restrained to a single object or train of ideas, in distinction from mania, in which the alienation is general. Moonstruck madness, moping melancholy, adjective. Gloomy. Depressed in spirits, dejected, applied to persons. Overwhelming grief has made me melancholy. 1. Dismal, gloomy, habitually dejected, as a melancholy temper. 2. Calamitous, afflictive, that may or does produce great evil and grief, as a melancholy event. The melancholy fate of the Albion, the melancholy destruction of Scio and Michelangi. Webster's 1828. Calamitous. Adjective. 1. Very miserable, involved in deep distress, oppressed with infelicity, wretched from misfortune, applied to men. 2. Producing distress and misery, making wretched, applied to external circumstances, as a calamitous event. Full of misery, distressful, wretched, applied to state or condition. Dejection, noun. 1. A casting down, depression of mind, melancholy, lowness of spirits, occasioned by grief or misfortune. 2. Weakness, as dejection of appetite. 3. The act of voiding the excrements, or the matter ejected. Webster's 1828. The absolutely insane economic model of governments today is expansion without purpose or limit, based on mathematical equations that suggest the economy, a fictional entity and artificial valuation of mammon, must continue to grow at any cost. This is akin to allowing a cancer to spread through the body because the consensus of medical science declared cancer as a good thing. The economy is just information. It is an endless financial artificial intelligence, the god of mammon's wet dream. And it is at the heart of the big legal lie. Consider also for a moment our so-called entertainment programming of today.
war simulations, robot armies taking over humanity, viral flesh-eating zombies, apocalyptic settings, aliens invading and destroying the world, ourselves destroying our own world, deadly plague and flu epidemics, vampires, monsters, parasitic infections, and all sorts of futuristic tales of how technology or forced evolution, or both combined, will kill us or at least absorb us into its mainframe for the AI's pleasure, disposal, and towards the furtherance of its cloud of collective knowledge. We are bombarded with such nihilistic misery on every channel and on every airwave and on every station. We are continuously shown counterculture propaganda while being re-educated in our perceptions of history, truth, nature, and thus the true meaning of God and even of our own nature. Our news channels actually compete to tell the best received opinions, lies, and commentary without actually reporting anything true, and certainly of no consequence will they advertise end-of-the-world-as-we-know-it products like gold and silver, storable foods, and other survival wares. Governments are bombarding us with advertisements for earthquake and other natural disaster preparedness, while at the same time passing draconian laws just in case these disasters actually happen. Crimes are well known in government and religious institutions, and yet completely uninvestigated and unanswered, committed without consequence, even when reported on by the news agencies. We are being genetically and mentally altered at a level only describable from the psyche of whatever it is we are becoming. And we are prescribed pharmaceutical drugs, not to cure any patented, profitable disease, but to temporarily carry us through what should otherwise be causing us to have a mental breakdown. The drugs make the misery of that melancholic life in third person barely tolerable. The solution is obvious, for the word solution means end of contract. In other words, the solution is to stop listening, stop watching, stop playing, stop pretending, stop lying, and stop being dependent upon that system of self-mutilation and blood annihilation. But most importantly, with the old revolution facilitated by anarchy and nihilism against not only the appearance, but especially the meaning of the word God, which was obfuscated only so to be replaced by immoral art, artifice, and now into an on-grid technological wasteland. This annihilation and irradiation of respect for the God of existence and its word from the standards and practices of law, education, and from the workplace necessarily spell the annihilation of our very own selves. There is no place to go under man's law but down from here. For nihilism allows no other passage or escape but non-existence. It allows only implosion. Annihilation. Noun. 1. The act of reducing to nothing or non-existence, or the act of destroying the form or combination of parts under which a thing exists, so that the name can no longer be applied to it, as the annihilation of a corporation. 2. The state of being reduced to nothing. Webster's 1828. Annihilate. Verb transitive. Latin ad and nihilum. Nothing, of ne, not, and ilum, a trifle. 1. To reduce to nothing. To destroy the existence of. No human power can annihilate matter. 2. To destroy the form or peculiar distinctive properties so that the specific thing no longer exists. As, to annihilate a forest by cutting and carrying away the trees, though the timber may still exist. To annihilate a house by demolishing the structure. Webster's 1828. As public persons, each of our houses, our estates, have been destroyed. We've been made common, general, and removed from a connection to our source. The private blood right of inheritance has been annihilated, made to be legally declared as non-existent. And this amounted to the legal theft of private lands stolen by licensed pirates according to the old written law. We have no power to change anything in government if we have no land of our own to be represented. The landholder is the master, the public person a transient, temporary visitor upon another's land and taxed as such. We are in a state of limbo, an illiterate multitude caught between heaven and hell,
equalized by law and by mammon, and all because our capacity to be free men, landholders, under God has been stripped, our blood made legally unrecognizable as if it does not exist in reality. In essence, it is not that God is dead, for that would spell our own fate as well. It is that we have voluntarily given up and lost our place in Jehovah. We left God, self-existence, not the other way around, so that we may practice lies in fiction under false legal gods and in their third persons. And so we may choose to remain in surety for the property of evil men, both governmental and ecclesiastical, or we may reclaim our true selves, being a product, issue, only of God and its nature. We may reestablish heaven or continue devouring ourselves in hell.
Heaven equals the unit verse. Hell equals the ad verse. Universe, noun, Latin, universitas. The collective name of heaven and earth and all that belongs to them. The whole system of created things. Webster's 1828. Adverse, adjective, Latin adversus, opposite, of ad and versus, turned, from verto to turn, see advert. The word was formerly accented by some authors on the last syllable, but the accent is now settled on the first. 1. Opposite, opposing, acting in contrary direction, conflicting, counteracting, as adverse winds, an adverse party. 2. Figuratively, opposing desire, contrary to the wishes or to supposed good, hence, unfortunate, calamitous, afflictive, pernicious, unprosperous, as adverse fate or circumstances. Verb transitive, adverse, to oppose, not used. Webster's 1828. It is a foolish question to pose whether or not heaven or hell exists. For heaven is untarnished, uncorrupted existence, the realm of Jehovah, as that which flourishes by the law of nature alone. But to the fool, one's first question would stem from the not existent, but what if? Where is the safety and security? What about government? Where are the police? Of course, these are strictly the thoughts of the adverse, as denizens of this living hell. The universe polices itself, from the smallest microphage to the maggot and the constant struggle for balance and neutrality between natural predator and prey. Too many predators, and the predators starve. Too many prey, and the prey overfeeds, causing imbalance between vegetation and prey, and so the prey starves. Whether one recognizes this untainted design of God and its law as heaven or not, does not negate its existence as the only possible heaven, harmony, on earth. It is only when man feigns his own designs and inventions in a vain attempt to improve on this perfect natural cycle of life and self-existence, that this perfect balance, as often volcanically, stormy, and ground-shockingly violent and unpleasant as it may appear, that harmony between law and life is lost. Man organizes to create the adverse, hell, with his fictions, his sciences, his lies, and his craftiness towards supporting and building them while abusing, polluting, and burning that very life support system of nature, only to cause his foolish inventions to come into artificial existence. All the substance of heaven, untouched nature, from the naturally occurring and eternally flowing waterfalls to the deepest forests, to the dried deserts, to the random fields of wheat and wildflowers, and to the ocean habitat full of colorful life. This is Jehovah, God, uncorrupted by man's artifice. This is heaven. The destruction, disease, and ruin that lies behind each dam and each imaginary corporate border that we call as pointless progress and society today, these are the realms of the adversaries, of men who live without connection to God's nature and law in the adverse, hell, and who may never truly know God as the beauty and glory of nature, heaven on earth. It is. For where else may man find such a place in the existence of the universe, Jehovah, perfectly suited to his needs, but upon this one sanctuary of a planet? A place created to cause him life, to feed and clothe him, to rain on him in the most naturally flowing and self-cleansing, distilling of waters, and to allow him the elements required for his breath in a naturally occurring, perfectly compounded gaseous atmosphere, present everywhere he may freely travel therein, and to allow him to be a part of what can only be called as heaven. And the only real, natural law that he ever need follow is merely to never taint, to never corrupt, and to never disrespect that which gives and sustains his very life, to keep pure his body vessel with self-love within this heaven in every way, both physically and figuratively, and to never lie. Heaven on earth, or as some call it, utopia, is not merely a pipe dream. It is simply the earth in its harmonious cycle, flow, energy, and functional design, unchanged by man. And so for man to find heaven, he must merely be reborn into it. He must respect all aspects of its interconnected existence. He must follow its law. He must do nothing that detunes nature's harmonious frequency of life. And so his lifestyle must be in constant worship and protection of this beautiful existence within Jehovah. This is eternal life in heaven. The organized crime hub of church and state, however, offer this spiritual heavenly place only as a reward for those whom obey the false doctrines they have recreated in adversity to the ancient knowledge of the scriptures, causing you to believe in what is not self-evident, that heaven is only attained by physical death from this earth. Like Jehovah, God, the common goyim of the nations must be made to believe, love, that God is external and separate from themselves, and thus from its own creation, its nature, its law. That God is outside of the universe and not the universe itself, self-existence. And that only under the artifice of legal and ecclesiastical law in obedience to the men running the church and state may any man attain such a life after life's end. We must obey man's law to be in God's favor. How ridiculous is that? To seek the favor of God while utterly disrespecting everything about its existent creation and law, including the taking of no other law or doctrine, makes no sense, no matter how you look at it. Heaven is not a reward after death. It is a life lived in servitude only to God's foundational law and nature. It is the root of living gladness, not the ghostly, untouchable dream of the dead. The Bible is the law of life, not death. We have all been turned into walking, spiritually dead monsters, and we may only find heaven when we return to the pureness of our source of life, unblemished by legal, anti-God, words, and law. This is the true path of a follower of Christ. Though I would never have thought myself to ever say such a thing in my lifetime, after so much propaganda and lies from the adverse, I can now see clearly that we must return to Jehovah through the example of Christ. Law. We must return to nature through the foundational principles of the scriptural natural law, which prevents all of these anarchical, nihilistic systems from affecting us, and from affecting God's perfect design of nature, from fictionally perpetuating our spiritual death. We must follow the word, Son, to escape the anti-word, Antichrist. For no human power can annihilate matter. And what is fiction but anti-matter? This does not mean that we must worship helplessly upon our knees to some altar or idol or form or image of man's imagination, and certainly to no king, pope, president, or other antichrist. Quite the opposite. In what seems an incredible twist of irony, it literally means that we must start worshiping existence again, as the very definition of Jehovah, all that is self-existent, in the Bible, which includes even ourselves when pure and untainted by the fictions of mammon and legalism. We must overcome this satanic, adversarial system of nihilism as the fictional dead law of artificial dead things, and embrace all of nature, self-existence, as the oneness that is the living God for which we are but a fractional and totally dependent part of. We can no longer pretend to be separate entities, legal personas, from nature, as if we can live healthily outside of that which is our own life support system of Jehovah. In short, we must detach from the umbilical cord of this legal matrix, artificial womb, of fiction. For each of our minds, bodies, and souls are slowly dying in reality while we are plugged into these anti-nature, anti-God, anti-Christ systems and their opposing laws. The path of Christ was nothing but a resistance to lies and fictions, a refusal of contracts and flattering titles, and a total disrespect for any persons of man. This is not religion. Again, this is the foundational principles, maxims, of the highest law. And it is the foundation of common law, the abandonment of which leading to all the legal snags and traps we will speak of in this work. In other words, to follow Christ is nothing more and nothing less than to be completely, voluntarily, and uninhibitedly absent of any legal belief or eyed entity. Christ was simply immune from the artful words of man's law, because he followed only God's word, law without man's words. And Christ is the story of the potential of each and every man. Christ is not a god to be worshipped as the modern church doctrines declare. Christ is a source of inspiration and emulation, the very key to the empowerment of free choice. But unlike the anarchist who fools himself into thinking that lawlessness is the path to free choice, the true follower of Christ knows clearly that only by the keeping of the foundations of God and the law of nature can one have the true natural freedom and law to keep and hold the right to choose. And so while the anarchist will declare it his own right to choose, though no law of governmental structure is apparent to keep and protect that right that he plagiarized from scripture and pretended to call it his own idea dragged out of the nihilistic ether, the follower of Christ knows that choice is the essence of the law, and that his choice must always be the path of Christ under the law of God. This is called the self-evident law, simply because no fiction may be allowed to interfere with that choice. If no fiction and lies of men existed, then the same choice would be made in self-evidence, even when standing against the greatest of liars and deceivers and agents of man's design matrix. I wish to be clear here that I am not interested in debating the finer points of what anarchy is to each individual practitioner or believer, lover of what they believe, love, this word title to mean. The very fact that no anarchist has the same foundational definition of the word anarchy tells me that no debate can be allowed, for nothing foundational may come from the doctrines of such nihilistic thought. One is guided scripturally not to suffer fools, lest that foolish influence cause oneself to become a like-minded fool, suffering one's own vomiting spew of fruitless information, false knowledge. One cannot discuss the nature of existence with one who pretends existence has no substance or meaning, and so there certainly can be no discussion of any of the foundational principles of law, of self-existence, God's nature. For what use is law without existence? Remember, we are only here to find truth, and truth is only offensive to lies and liars. I am only interested in the word anarchy and its intent when created and now misused. What I do wish to put forward here is that while the followers of Christ and the natural law are well recognized in lawful standing as the common, foundational law of the United States and other nations, as law unwritten and unenforceable, but also inversely non-proprietary and thus non-sanctionable, anarchy in any form, name, or flattering version or title will always and only ever be considered as a conspiracy against the current constituted government of people. This fact is inescapable. No matter how appealing and fallaciously logical you can make it sound, anarchy will only ever be defined as an attack on the current system and government in place, and that government and its military is there to protect the people, landholders, from exactly that, making anarchist thought an exercise in futility. It is a losing proposition in every way imaginable. It may only lead to defeat or worse for its practitioner. And at worst, it will turn entire nations into melancholic wastelands of moral impropriety, as we see today. The result of empty revolutions leading to the exact nowhere that only nihilism may lead to. These so-called revolutions toward the celebration of non-existence lead instead to a governmental presence unlike any other in history, an organized criminal syndicate and protection racket that relabels the anarchical lawbreakers as the legal lawmakers. For in the end, there is no difference between outright crime and a legal license to commit unlawful acts that are otherwise unacceptable under the natural law. The Bible says to leave such places, like districts of the cities and nations, and not to stand foolishly and anarchically opposed to them, while at the same time acting under their persona and law. For one's hatred of a thing is just as powerful as his love of a thing, love and hate being synonymous in the fact that they imply belief and respect of whatever is loved or hated. These emotional outpourings are acknowledgments of the false existence and power of artificial things, and yet one cannot fight what does not exist in one's own mind. The anger and disdain expressed by the anarchist toward government is unfortunately also evidence of respect for that fictional government. To invoke its name, word, is to invoke its existence and false authority. But how does an anarchist fight that which he cannot name? For to name anything is to acknowledge the power of that name and acknowledgement of existence. And so the anarchist, unlike the man following in Christ's example, is in a constant state of paradox. To imagine something to not exist is never a default state of thought. In other words, something must be made or said to exist before it can be said not to exist. So how can I state with any sanity that government does not exist, when in order to state such a thing, I would be invoking and even pointing to some aspect or writings of government when I state my declaration of its non-existence? This paradox, this fractal equation, could go on and on forever and end nowhere, which fulfills the nihilistic charge that keeps its debate alive. And so we can say that without a doubt, anarchy and its close cousin nihilism are certainly not self-evident, self-existent truths. And this is all that matters, for the law of nature leads us away and protects us from all things that are not self-evident and self-existent. And ultimately, this is why we are to show only true love towards our enemies, for only forgiveness will heal what is built in hatred and adultery against us. To pull the nihilist back into worshiping and belief in existence, one must offer it to the man carrying that burden of false title. For the enemy is the title, not the man. The enemy is belief of artificial things and constructs. The enemy is the lie. Anarchy is not peace, nor is it a peaceful movement, by any enemy's definition. You may redefine it any way you like in your own mind, but your personal definition will not stand in any form of legal authority over a government's sovereign authority when you are brought to stand in legal persona and treason under their laws. Try to see reason here, for the author certainly recognizes that most who are driven to the anarchy movement have good intentions, but are suffering from the hopeless, powerless melancholy of nihilism, and so have been directed and led away from true knowledge. As a card-carrying U.S. citizenship, property of government, you have to be an absolute fool to publicly declare yourself at the same time an anarchist, which, in action, is literally and self-evidently illegal for U.S. citizenships. This dualism is an equal insanity to any U.S. citizenship, a public, proprietary legal person, calling himself at the same time as a true Christian. Remember, one's legal identity defines one's pretended highest law and therefore one's God. A man in citizenship cannot be at the same time in anarchy. That would be a paradox. I cannot be in water and also in the air. At best, the public person may pretend and use that flattering title of either anarchist or Christian. But his actions under whatever law he follows are the only real proof he has of his true identity and intention. There is simply no public legal status of anarchist. I've not yet met a single self-titled anarchist that is not also a citizenship, bound in surety under the doctrine of master and servant, volunteerism, to the state, any more than I have met a real follower of Christ that isn't faking it in flattering title while in citizenship and membership to the Antichrist system of legal law and corporate religions. You can stop making fun of and debating each other as being fake and full of crap, for you are both equally so. Instead, the both of you need to come to the Bible scriptures so that you may find knowledge on common ground, which you already have way more of than you could possibly know. For you are both completely ignorant of what the word of God's nature is, having both been tainted by the religions of the secular world in mammon, in love, and in hatred thereof. Remember, this work is not written in judgment of anyone, but only with the same pure intent of the allegorical life and spirit of Christ, to save you from your third-person self. We all have our demons, and therefore we must help each other to shed them without hate and judgment. For right now, ignorance of the highest foundational law is our collective demon. And without that word, law, we may never be free and never defeat the need for the legal matrix to control, govern us. We must earn the right to self-govern our own actions, and not to vainly promote no government at all. Either learn to self-govern under the moral law, or continue to become accustomed to the ever-degrading legal law of sin in citizenship. An interesting twist here is that while the Bible tells us to never identify with anything but what is real, and to be at oneness only with reality, self-existence, without any exaggerative flattery or other lies, at the same time all of these movements toward anti-state and anti-religion are steeped in some flattering title of identity within that semi-organized, cult-eared group. There seems to be a sense of unofficial membership, of wanting to be known by whatever title is being religiously or non-religiously put forward, be it atheist or anarchist or even Christian. If we were to examine the universal trait between them all, we find one common thread: paradox. For the atheist cannot exist without God, the anarchist cannot exist without law, and the true Christian cannot exist without the Bible. Yet the atheist denies God, the anarchist denies law, and the Christian unwittingly denies the law of God as exemplified by Christ in the Bible story, following instead the doctrines of some denomination or evangelistic adversary on TV. This is a fascinating look into the power of word magic and into the sophisticated conundrums it can create. It is the power of our own delusion as the denial of what is self-evident and self-existent. It is the contrarian belief in something as nothing, and nothing as something. Again, the intent of this knowledge as it is presented here is not to insult or somehow argue over what is and what is not anarchy, but to show that the word anarchy, for all its intents and purposes, is adversarial to the natural law of God, and thus absolutely not a viable, spiritual, or obviously a legal or lawful solution. It is by its name antagonistic to law. At its worst, it is the nihilistic and sometimes suicidal outlook of overwhelming skepticism of God, that God does not exist, and that therefore reality somehow does not exist, or at least that it cannot be proven to exist. But as we will see, the very definition of Jehovah is all that is in self-existence, and which needs no artful legal proof of existence due to its self-evidence to the senses. And this we have now found is the very foundational law of government, the creator of fictions. The author here wishes only to stress that anarchy is a no-sum game, having no structure or place to go. It is spiritual death. Lawlessness is nothingness. And nothing could be more satanic toward the law of God's nature than that. If I choose to follow lawlessness, I also choose the God of lawlessness, which ironically will be whatever devilish man can organize and control, govern, the minds, meant, of other men to cheat, steal, and kill for him. The natural law of God, inversely, insists upon self-governance according to a very well-laid-out and self-evident moral code for all men, where Jehovah, through Christ, is the ruler, standing as the very antithesis of anarchy. For Christ is the personified word, law, not a living man standing under some crown or office as an arbitrary ruler. And this ruler figuratively asks nothing unreasonable in any way, except that you refrain from trying to be a ruler in its name, and that leaders do so without authority and only in goodwill and charity towards others, never for self-beneficial intent. This is the idealist voluntary society, so often spoken about by the confused, by those who haven't quite realized yet that they already live in a voluntary society, within the legalism and citizenship of the nations. The anarchist and other flatteringly titled activists out there, who will always, in their lack of governance and organization, fail to attain their utopian dream, simply because they have been made to forget what utopia, untainted nature, and its law is. And they can't possibly know what the law is self-evidently supposed to be, because the only real book of law rebuts all other doctrines and has been obfuscated from them. And so I must again stress here that the nations of today, being de facto, illegitimate, militarized corporations, artificial persons, are each constituted and standing with immoral, antichrist licentiousness to commercially operate from its own self-declared sovereignty,
lawlessness, through the authority of its own bloodlines of private people, States United, and by an elect, elite, voice of gods in the pretense of a legislature or from its king, queen, pope, etc. These nations are a tool of anarchy, of licensure, which means that the sovereign people these nations protect are lawless, being above the law they create in their nations for all others, for citizenships and public persons. And through these legal machines of false law, they bestow legal rights and permissions, licensure, to special members, citizenships, through syndicalist flattering titles of employment, use, and conscription, oath of service, which allow these hirelings, mercenaries, and prostitutes of government to act in anarchy to all established written and unwritten law. The nation grants its own false, unnatural immunity from all law. This is thus, paradoxically, a system of organized anarchy. The lawless gods rule supreme over their own created nihilist system of law, laws which can be ignored or redefined at the signature of any judge, president, governor, or legislative consensus. And as for the rest of us in this multitude of illiteracy, we act like animals competing for the lesser evils, pleasures, privileges, and benefits of this system, following the legal law that defines our status in society and that rules over whatever our diploma, diplomatic papers of immunity, licenses, and permits say that our profession may be. And the higher we climb the corporate ladder, the closer to gods we become, receiving more exemptions and licenses from the gods of legal law, the more morally depraved and impressed by fiction we become. And at the water cooler, we marvel at how the biggest and most deceitful, immoral a-holes get the best promotions, a sign, at least, that most of us still have some semblance of moral and spiritual capacity left within us. That perhaps some may be saved by spiritual knowledge and through the living law, the law of the living. End of chapter 1, part 8.